This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. There was an historic meeting this week in New York City. Evangelical leaders from all across the country came to the Empire State in order to gain an understanding of where GOP presidential frontrunner Donald Trump stands on the issues most important to them. Religious freedom, marriage, and the Supreme Court were all on the minds of those attending. How did the Donald fare? On Wednesday, FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, former Ohio Secretary of State, and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission, Ken Blackwell joined Tony with that answer.
Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Always good to be with you, sir.
All right. Are you you back in the Queen City?
Back in the Queen City, going up to Columbus, and then on my way to Cleveland to sort of map out all of the coordinates that we were going to have to follow for both the Council for National Policy meeting and then the GOP convention.
Yeah, we got a big month ahead with both the Council for National Policy, which I serve as president of, and the RNC convention, which I'll be on the platform committee. Of course, Ken will be on the ground there as well. Hey, let's talk about this meeting yesterday with Donald Trump. You've been through a number of presidential campaigns. You've been around a lot of presidents and presidential candidates. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday's gathering?
I think we've engaged Mr. Trump in a thoughtful process around some very, very important issues. There are those of us who have still some questions that need to be resolved. There are others who have committed themselves to the Trump candidacy. And there are still some others that are very, very critical of those of us who are thoughtful and still thinking it through, and those who have already signed up with Donald Trump. I was inspired by the unity in the room. Not just the interaction between Donald Trump and the social conservative leaders, but by the intentionality of the whole process. You and Bill Dallas and the other folks who really did spearhead this, is to be commended, because as important as Mr. Trump's commitment to religious liberty, reforming the federal court system back to a less activist court and back to a court along the federal lines that will look at originalism and respect the separation of powers. I was impressed by the fact that we had unified to the point of being able to have the conversation and communicate to Mr. Trump that, we do a lot of work together. We've been on the ground for decades now trying to reform the system and bring it back in line with biblical truth. And I think he got the point that, we are not somebody that will be easily dismissed or somebody that will be, let's say, a collective Trump chump.
Mm-hmm.
We are thoughtful activists and committed Christians who want to see American exceptionalism restored.
Well, I thought it was clearly a connection point with him. And, I mean, a lot of people very skeptical. I mean, wanting to be for him, and that's what I attribute this large turnout, is a lot of people wanted to be for him or want to be for him, and so they wanted to come to see if they could resolve the concerns that they had. And I think he connected, he hit very hard multiple times the issue of religious liberty, that, he would protect people's right to live according to their beliefs. But I also think there was an underlying, not necessarily articulated, but it was kind of referenced, and that was how, he is attacked by the media and the left for not towing a politically correct line. And of all of the segments of society that can identify with that, that's the evangelical community that lives by a standard that is transcendent, that is not, they're not going to yield up to the political correctness of the day, and they've been hammered. And so I think that was a point of common ground between the two.
You're absolutely right. And I think, one, the leaders in that room, they know that we need an alternative to Hillary Clinton. And there will be people who will go to the polls in November, and they will vote against Hillary. There was a desire in that room to find reasons to be not just against Hillary, but for Donald Trump. And I think he took some very positive steps towards getting us there. On the other hand, I think there's a realization right now that he had a very unconventional primary, and he is lacking the infrastructure nationwide to go up against the Clinton machine. One network of institutions, individuals, and activists that can do it is, in fact, the network of churches and the social conservative organizations across the country. You know, not just those in favor of advancing religious liberty or restoring that concept to our day-to-day lives, but folks who are big defenders of the Second Amendment, who get categorized as social conservatives or cultural conservatives, what have you. So, look, we have a network. He needs that network in order to beat Hillary Clinton, and we need to help him understand that there's no accident that there are more Republican and conservative governors in this country than there are tree-hugging liberals. And there are more state legislatures or chambers of state legislatures controlled by Republicans and conservatives, and that's because we have been busy at the grassroots level. This is a network of activists and a political force that he needs in order to win in November. And your point, I think, has been very, very pointed and on target, and that is that platform that got us there, you know, is something that means something to that network that he needs, and he needs to let us know early on that he's committed to it.
To the GOP platform, their conservative platform. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Ken Blackwell, discussing yesterday's meeting between evangelical conservative leaders and Donald Trump that took place in New York City. I want to address an issue. First off, I want to say the group that pulled this together, UIP and My Faith Votes, and of course FRC Action, our organization was a part of, along with others. We've also issued an invitation. These are 501c3 organizations, issued an invitation to Hillary Clinton to have the same conversation. We're waiting for a response. Hadn't heard back yet, but this was not an endorsement. This was, as we have been very clear about, a conversation. He made some comments in an earlier meeting that I did not hear in our meeting, and I was kind of tagged with this or asked about it in a couple of the media interviews last night, where he was criticizing Hillary Clinton's faith or religious activity or lack thereof. And of course, my response was, and you kind of touched on this yesterday as well in the press conference that we had post-event, I don't think Donald Trump needs to nor should make this a religious contest. I mean, this is a contest for honoring the Constitution and those first freedoms of protecting religious liberty. I mean, Donald Trump does not have commonality, I think, when it comes to the practice of the Christian faith with the evangelical leaders. He's open to it. He's not hostile to it, which is refreshing given what we've seen in the last 7.5 years, where it's been almost a daily pounding of an administration that is hostile to religious liberty. But this is a contest for the Constitution.
Absolutely. And that's why the court is so important. That's why, you know, as you know, I always talk about the rule of law, not just as it applies to us within a cultural context, but within an economic context. One of the reasons we've had the success success that we've had economically and why we are the most prosperous nation in the history of the world is because we have had the rule of law, and that has, in fact, given a predictability to a free market system.
Right.
It has only been, you know, with this, in the last 7.5 years, this attack on the rule of law, the Constitution, and this notion that we should be on this path to socialism.
Right.
And we found ourselves with the very, very low labor participation rate, almost a historic low.
Yeah.
In recent memory, as well as the number of people who are just sensing a hopelessness when it comes to the opportunity to work.
All right, we've got to leave it there. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program. It was good to see you yesterday in New York City.
Yes, sir.
You can find out more about Ken Blackwell when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, we'll hear more about this meeting of evangelicals from Congressman Mark Walker. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the media telling you what to think? It is difficult to sort out what is true and what is false in the news. That's why Family Research Council President Tony Perkins writes a daily newsletter called The Washington Update. This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious liberty, the protection of life, and the defense of natural marriage, not only in Washington, but around the country. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from the latest election season news to underreported stories about both setbacks and successes in the fight for religious liberty, the sanctity of life, and marriage. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Visit frc.org/Washington-update today to learn more and subscribe. Again, that's frc.org/Washington-update.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Members of Congress were also interested in what Donald Trump had to say on Tuesday in New York, and for good reason. Several members are worried that this election could have a drastic impact on the House and Senate. And how the GOP presumptive nominee Donald Trump acts has a direct effect on them at the polls. However, it's not just the polls that matter. In this election, the country is at stake. Former North Carolina pastor and current representative from the 6th Congressional District of North Carolina, Mark Walker, joined Tony on Wednesday.
Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Appreciate you having us on today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. I want to get, I know as a former pastor, or one that I would probably not former, but you're not pastoring a church, but you still have the heart of a minister. But let's talk about your perspective from that, as well as a member of Congress. What did you think was significant about yesterday's gathering?
Well, I think a couple of things jumped out at me yesterday. One was the fact that the evangelicals mean enough to Mr. Trump that he's willing to come in and put himself out there and answer the questions. Obviously, it's not the most familiar world that he's in, but at the same time, to show that effort that he is willing and wanting to learn was impressive to me. The second aspect of this is I don't remember time, and I involved in Southern Baptist Convention for many years, even the worship pastor for the president for a little while. I don't ever remember a time where so many evangelicals from different backgrounds, denominations, came together under one roof. And as I've thought about that, talked to other members today, I believe there is a movement, or should I say an understanding, that we are facing an assault on religious liberties like never before. And I think it is driving the church together to lock arm in arm to look for some champions who are willing to speak on the people's behalf.
That's exactly the way I see it. I mean, there is this existential threat that is out there, and you are absolutely right. You had charismatic, Pentecostal, mainline, Baptist, non-denominational. It was the largest gathering I know of in a generation of evangelical leaders. And it was interesting, almost immediately, Donald Trump zeroed in on the religious liberty issue. I mean, he knew who he was speaking to, obviously, but he made some very strong statements, and that, I think, is what many of these leaders were looking for. I mean, let me ask you, what was your take on his focus on the issue of religious liberty?
I was impressed that he even made it an issue. And it's telling me that he's paying attention to some of the things that are going on. I was in the House floor standing in the well weeks ago when the names bigot, racist, the chants of shame, just because Republicans were trying and stood up that particular evening for organizations that have religious beliefs they've cherished for decades. And some of these organizations are the people who do the greatest work in the inner cities, that they go in and hold the hands of AIDS patients, that try to place children in proper home structures. And this is coming from supposedly the tolerant crowd. So
right.
I think that Mr. Trump is paying attention to that and understanding the battle that we're facing right now.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina, my guest. You know what? I was just talking in the previous segment about that. I think a point of connection with Donald Trump and the evangelical leaders, not theological. You know, I don't think it's a faith connection, but I think it's a connection of understanding of how he's been vilified for simply standing and speaking what is clearly evident common sense, but it's not politically correct. And there's not another segment of the society that's been more vilified and attacked than the evangelical community for refusing to yield up their transcendent beliefs to political correctness.
Absolutely. And even when the president recently decided to pass out a decree or a mandate that all children would get to choose and pick, we immediately fired back a letter, and I think Mr. Trump was aware of that, asking the president, how does he plan to enforce that? Why would you put a teacher in a situation that's a lose-lose when she feels like there may be a safety concern? Get beyond the transgender aspect of it. Why would we even do that to our educators who are already in some classrooms struggling to keep order?
Right.
Now we've added an additional complication because the mandate actually said the student gets to override both the parents and the teacher's discretion. I'm amazed that there's not even a larger outcry, but I'm very grateful that, as you said, there's a commonality with Mr. Trump being attacked and now our religious liberties being so, that I think hopefully it is bringing the church together in a way that we've probably not seen, I know, in our generation.
Congressman Walker, we're up against a break, but one final question for you. Did you leave more comfortable with Donald Trump as the presumptive GOP nominee?
Yes, we did, and that seemed to be the consensus of the people that I talked with. Are there still some, you know, we're still working through some questions. I think the honest answer is yes, and that's due to some of just Mr. Trump, you know, still working through some of the raw aspects of not being a politician. But I think there's a chance, and listen, the alternative certainly offends me a whole lot more.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Congressman Mark Walker, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony. Have a good day.
You can find out more about Congressman Walker when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, former chief of police from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, joins us to talk about the gun control battle that is occurring just days after the tragedy in Orlando. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Nowadays, the headlines we read can be discouraging, especially when they relate to the direction our country is headed in. It can often feel as if God has left the building and we are on our own. As a response, Warren Cole Smith recently spoke at the Family Research Council about his book, Restoring All Things. It was a soul-stirring presentation that cut through the chaos and uncertainty to show how God is powerfully active and intensely engaged in fulfilling his promise to restore all things. Warren's collection of inspiring real-life stories of justice, mercy, love, and forgiveness in our communities and neighborhoods help us encounter a God who is intimately involved in his creation and using his church to work out his plan for our culture, our country, and our world. Warren challenges the church to continue Christ's work of restoring all things by running toward the gunfire of cultural decline, to celebrate what is good, contribute what is missing, stop what is evil, and restore what is broken. Visit frc.org/university to view this talk and many more. Most of us are aware of ISIS' barbaric practices and their unceasing violation of Christians and other minority groups' religious liberties in Iraq and Syria. When persecution is supported by a nation's laws and/or driven by its culture, it is never acceptable. It deserves our attention. Family Research Council recently hosted a panel discussion entitled Religious Liberty Around the World, Where We Stand as of Spring 2016, featuring some of the world's leading experts on persecution. Former Congressman Frank Wolf of the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, Tina Ramirez, founder and executive director of Hardwired Global, Pervez Rafiq, president of Bleeding for Belief, and Tom Farr, director of the Religious Freedom Project at the Berkeley Center for Religion, Peace, and World Affairs at Georgetown University. The panel discussed persecution in Iraq, Pakistan, and Nigeria, the actions of ISIS and Boko Haram, and how every believer can play a part in defending religious liberty around the world. To hear this conversation, visit frc.org/university.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Those on the left are masters at manipulating the truth. What happened in Orlando was a terrorist attack. There's no question about that. We have audio of the perpetrator praising Allah and committing his attack to the Islamic State. However, where are progressives placing the blame? On the rights of American citizens to keep and bear arms. Would gun control laws have prevented Orlando? Is there a danger in focusing the attention on gun control when it was a dangerous anti-America ideology that caused 9/11, the Boston bombing, and the attacks in San Bernardino and Orlando? Former chief of police in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Greg Ferris, was here on Thursday with the latest.
Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Pleasure to be with you.
All right, tell me, would gun control laws solve what happened in Orlando?
Tony, I'll take you back to your military career and our joint police career in previous years. They're firing on the wrong target, crossfire. The problem, as you said, is terrorism. The problem is not law-abiding citizens having weapons.
Now, we, in addition to, I served in the police department when you were both lieutenant detectives and as you were chief, but we also worked together in the State Department's anti-terrorism program, so you actually know a little bit about terrorism as well. We have a bigger problem here, and part of the problem is we're refusing to identify what the problem is.
We're refusing to identify the problem. And we are, as you said, diverting attention from the real problem, which is Islamic terrorism, by focusing on an effort to take lawful weapons away from law-abiding citizens. One or two of which, in that horrible situation in Orlando a few days ago, might well have prevented a large part of that carnage.
Now, I'm gonna be very clear here for our listeners. That you are, how many years in law enforcement?
44 as of next week.
And, you know, as I said, the head of the chief of police in Baton Rouge also, I think you're the only person that served as both chief and sheriff in East Baton Rouge. So, I mean, you've been at the top. You understand these things. Are you telling me that you believe that citizens, law-abiding citizens having guns, is a deterrent and a way to protect citizens from terrorists and other bad guys?
Yes, I am. I think that we've seen in numerous instances over the last 10 years or more that no matter how good the police are, no matter how quickly they respond, that the old model of taking hostages and making demands has given way to the new model of going in and starting to kill people immediately.
Right.
So trained civilian response has become infinitely more important than it was back a couple of decades ago.
Because these guys, I mean, these what we've been dealing with lately, they plan on dying. And so they don't. They're just going to take as many people as they can with them. The key here is to eliminate them before they eliminate other people.
It is, and that is a joint effort, I think, of law enforcement and trained civilians. Obviously, the FBI and other law enforcement agencies have a huge role to play in identifying and addicting these people. But as we've seen in Boston and in San Bernardino and in Orlando, that is far from 100%. And I think that a trained, armed civilian has to be able to respond and be ready to respond immediately to something like that. I mean, we'll figure out the motivation later. What we
right.
do immediately is that people are getting killed.
Chief, final question. We're up against a break, but are you concerned that this diversion that's being led by liberals could ultimately lead to more people dying in this country from terrorist attacks?
I am very much concerned about that, and I'm very much concerned about unelected and unaccountable bureaucrats, Lois Lerner types, getting to decide who's on a terror watch list and who's not. That could extend to you and me.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Chief Greg Ferries, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
Well, you can find out more about today's guest when you go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkiel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.